You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
And that's who trained me. And if you so choose, I could train you as well. I could teach you about strength that lies deep within. Teach you how to unlock power. Teach you discipline, confidence, self-respect.
Yeah, well, I just moved to the area, and I was looking for some sort of workout. You know, just to stay in shape.
Taekwondo is terrific for keeping in shape, but it's also a deadly serious killing system. I mean, it's probably the best of all martial arts.
I hear jiu-jitsu is really good for balance.
Jiu-jitsu sucks. What you want is Taekwondo. It's got everything. Mental, physical.
That's good, because when I was in school abroad, I really got into yoga, and that's a lot of breathing techniques and meditation.
Meditation's terrific and all, but never heard of it saving anyone from a gang rape type situation. Meditate on that. Rape.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits?
Your $5 ass down before I make change.
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think with fly. Think.
You dirt-eating piece of slime. You scum-sucking pig. You son of a motherless goat.
Wait, let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude.
You're killing me, Smalls.
That guy in a little coat.
You stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
Welcome to Cinema Crespediso.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going? It is episode 187 of Cinema Crespediso. 187. You guys know what that means. I am hanging out in the Crespediso studio. It is a balmy summer day. That's the Crespediso weather report that helps you wherever and whenever you are. With me is the co-host, co-producer, Codiso, the man himself, the one and only anti-hero 419. You know his name. Why do we even bother introducing him every week? Because everyone knows who I'm talking about, but I gotta do it anyway because it's in the podcasting bylaws, both domestic and international. Ladies and gentlemen, Drew Zakogman is here. Drew!
What up, dude? How goes it?
How you doing, dude?
So, am I like Jason Bourne? You know my name?
Everyone knows your name, yeah. For now on, all Crespediso marketing will just be a picture of you. And it'll say,
you know his name.
The podcast name. You know his name.
You know the podcast.
You know the podcast. And people are like, who is this guy?
What's the podcast? I'm so confused.
And then you tell them the podcast, and they're like, what is that? That's a thing? So welcome, guys, to Cinema Crespediso. We do this all the time, and we are glad that you are joining us for the first time, if you are. And if you're a regular listener, well, hell, you are. You guys are the best. Thank you for coming back. We have some stuff to talk about. We got a movie to review, and we got some reviews from listeners, a couple of movie stories, news stories, et cetera, et cetera. You know the Crespediso stuff. It's how we do. So let's get started with the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week, which means I have to get started with the intro,
which is this one.
We got what you see. Movies on fleek. Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. Netflix Instant Pick of the Week.
Oh, snap. That's right. Netflix Instant Pick of the Week time. You go to chriscrisp.com for the past Netflix Instant Picks of the Week. Last week was The Big Short. Excellent movie. I hope you people watched it and enjoyed it. And then they got mad at the big banks and were like, boo. And
oh, you fuckers.
Then he got scared about the water and were like, no.
As if you shouldn't have been mad at the big banks anyway.
Yeah, you should be mad anyway, guys. Are you paying attention? Are you paying attention? Drew, Get us started. What is this week's Netflix and the pick of the week? How are we doing this? What's going
Chris,
on?
Chris, yeah. This movie is from 1989. It's rated R. It's 1 hour, 46 minutes long.
Is it a comedy?
Yes.
Is it Major League?
Yes.
All right. Major League. Starring Tom Berenger, Charlie Sheen, Wesley Snipes.
Corbin Burnson.
Corbin Burnson as the shortstop.
Rene Russo.
Rene Russo as the love interest of Mr. Berenger. Dennis Haysbert, the Allstate guy, is like, you're in mm-hmm. fans of Allstate. Yep. He plays Serrano, Pedro Serrano, the Cuban guy. It's a fun movie about underdog, ragtag, group of rascally individuals coming together. It's a damned man, in this case, the team owner, who's trying to tank the team so she can move it to a different city.
And a nice nod to the Cleveland Indians, like, hey, guess what? You guys may suck, as always, but
as always,
In this universe,
you guys make it to the World Series. We're still not willing to say that you guys win it all.
No, because that'll never happen.
Because this is a fantasy world, science fiction. Yeah, exactly. Where we're going to have dragons in here, too. What's going on?
So, I mean, sure. Might as well.
But it's a fun. Ogres. It's a super fun movie. I really enjoy it. It's a classic. Hell yeah.
It's a classic hell yeah.
It's a classic hell yeah.
It is. Charlie Sheen's awesome.
Wesley Snipes is awesome. They're all awesome.
Berenger's not bad either.
Berenger's great. He's the heart and soul of the team as the old man, giving it one last go around with his bad knees. Yep. He's like, I'm going to do it for Rene Russo, because it's Rene Russo. And who wouldn't do it for Rene Russo?
Yeah, seriously. So, I do it for Rene Russo.
There you go. So there you go, guys. Major League is this week's Netflix pick of the week from 1989. Excellent pick. Thank you, Drew. Let's get into that box office recap for the week, where we start in our top five.
Number five.
Excellent.
Star Trek Beyond, $10.2 million, total of $127.
That STB, I still don't know what it means. Star Trek Beyond what?
I told you, there was Star Trek Bed, that was the first one. Star Trek Bath was the second one. This is Star Trek Beyond.
That's right. Okay, I forgot about that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Number four this week.
Number four.
The Secret Life of Pets, made $11.5 million, total of $319.5.
How much total?
$319.5.
Wow.
That's domestic.
Wowie, wow, wow, that's a lot of money.
International, 182. Worldwide box office, 502 and change.
That's why they just announced Secret Life of Pets 2 coming out in 2018.
I mean, it made $500 million, Chris.
Yeah, so they are fast-tracking that sequel. It is happening as soon as possible. So if you like the first one, you're getting ready to get a second one. Hope you enjoy it. We and Table, a couple of our guests recently have seen it. Amy, Drew Thompson, and Ross McCoy. Both saw it and reviewed it, and check it out. Check out those past episodes of the show.
Coming to number three.
Number three.
Bad Moms made $14.2 million, total of $51.
Bad Moms. How are the reviews on Bad Moms? Did we check that last week on Rotten Tomatoes?
No, hang on.
Because it's a comedy. I could use a good comedy. What was the last good comedy that we've seen in a theater? It's been a while since we've seen something that's like generally like really funny. Like, genuinely really funny.
I mean, Keanu was funny.
Keanu was funny, but that was back in April. That was months ago. That was months ago, motherfucker. You think this is a motherfucking game? Yeah, see? You can't even think of a good comedy. Neighbors 2? No.
That wasn't that good.
Well, see, everything's been like, blah.
Bad Moms, 63% on the Rotten Tomatoes.
So it's not even that good, relatively speaking, neither. What's the average rating?
Computer's slow.
Computer's glitching. Glitching
no, not computer. Glitching, just slow.
Slow computer.
Bad Mom boasts a terrific cast and a welcome twist on domestic comedy, and they're often enough to compensate for the movie's unfortunate inability to take full advantage of its assets.
Assets, you know what that means.
It's like a hot chick who doesn't know she's hot.
No nudity. That's what it sounds like to me. But those are the best. Those are the best chicks. So... I guess it sounds like a Redbox type thing for us, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I get around to it.
Like, it's okay.
It's not even something that's like, I need to watch that movie. Like, if it happens to where I watch the movie, okay, cool. Like, but I'm not going to seek it out.
FX is shown at 5 p.m. on a Wednesday.
Exactly.
I'll watch it.
I'm sitting home. It's 5 p.m. Sure, why not?
Put it on.
Number two this week.
Number two.
Jason Bourne.
Jason Bourne.
$22.7 million.
You know his name.
A total of $103.
You know his name.
You do. You do know his name. And you know the name of the director. And unfortunately, they didn't make a very good movie.
No, man. What was up with that? Why didn't they make a good movie?
That's been the MO this summer.
What the fuck?
The MO this summer has been, ooh, I can't wait for this movie to come out. What a piece of shit.
What? Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And it's like, why? Why? I just want to know. Because Jason, Matt Damon, he left the series. He's like, I'm not going to make another one. Paul Greengrass is like, I'm not making another one. And then they're like, you know, we'll make another one, but it's got to be for the right reasons, man. The screenplay's got to be there. It's got to be timely, blah, blah, blah. And then they make this movie. And it's
none of those things.
It's like, what attracted you? I felt like those are all lies. And you're lying just for years. And what, someone just gave you a check with enough zeros? And you're like, okay, well, fine, do it. Sons of bitches. I feel like, you know what? No more heroes, Drew.
Speaking of No More Heroes, coming in at number one.
We reviewed Jason Bourne last week.
Yeah.
So you can listen to last week's show for our third review of Jason Bourne. Also go to chriscrespo.com for my review of Jason Bourne.
Speaking of summer blockbusters and not so blockbustery, I need to apologize to our listeners because I kind of hyped up this movie thinking it was going to be something better.
We all thought it was going to be good.
Number one this week, Suicide Squad, $135 million opening weekend.
Record-breaking opening weekend.
Which is... I have a feeling the dip next week, though, on this movie is going to be awful.
Based on word of mouth, I wouldn't be surprised if this movie ends up making less than $50 million next week.
Everybody's asking me, Drew, should I see Suicide Squad? Drew, should I see Suicide Squad? And I'm like, well, guys,
I mean,
that's up to you.
That is up to you.
I'm gonna put this out there. I'm going to give you a couple of things. I'm going to say it was better than Batman versus Superman. Not by much, but it was, in my book.
Man, it's a tough call.
It still
didn't live up
to the trailers, didn't live up to the hype.
Yeah, I would agree with all
and,
that.
And is totally... I mean, you can totally wait for this movie to come out on your big screen TV at home.
I think so.
And you would not miss a goddamn thing.
I think so. I gotta agree. It's such a bummer of a movie.
Is it one of these movies where, like, people are gonna be like, oh shit, did you see that part in Suicide Squad and blah, 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 blah? It's like, man, that movie wasn't all that good.
We saw it a few days ago now.
Yep.
We already recorded and released our spoiler-filled bonus episode where we talked about it for like 30 minutes and broke it down. Everything we liked about it, good or bad. So you can check that out if you don't care about spoilers. This is a spoiler-free conversation.
There were a few redeeming moments.
Yes. There are moments throughout it where it's like, you know, that was a funny exchange of dialogue.
Same thing happened in Batman. Interesting. In Batman versus Superman.
Yeah. The same thing. Where little bits here and there. I like this. But as a whole, it just didn't come together.
Exactly. As a whole, it didn't come together. It didn't feel like a movie. It didn't feel like a story. It didn't feel like the movie should have been made like this.
Right.
But it was.
The villain was so bland.
And this is what we were given.
What a bland villain. Days later, I'm forgetting a lot what happened in the movie.
I mean, the only two people who had... I mean, the standout characters were obviously Will Smith and Margot Robbie.
Because they focused on them. They were like, these are our movie stars, so let's...
But even
let's
still...
Let's give these two characters the most work and the most character work.
It's not like any of the other characters... It's not like anybody else did such a good job to warrant, you know, like, oh, no. You know... That was surprising. Like in Batman vs. Superman, you know, I was genuinely surprised and interested in Wonder Woman.
Sure.
Like
a surprise breakout character type of deal.
Exactly. Yeah, in this, that very well could have happened if somebody had fucking stepped up and nobody did. Or maybe the director was just like, fuck it, we don't care.
I don't think they cared enough about the other characters to give them that kind of attention.
Jared Leto as Joker was a nice little sidetrack from everything.
Joker should have been the bad guy in the movie, but he wasn't.
But
that was fucked up.
We talked about that in the spoiler.
And then also talking about how I thought at first I wasn't too big on his Joker. By the end of the movie, I thought it was okay, but I wanted more. Apparently, there is more. We'll talk about that.
Are we going to get a fucking director's cut of this shitty movie too?
I don't know about that, but we'll talk about some of the stuff that got cut out in the second half of the show, of this episode for sure. But yeah, man, I was disappointed overall. It's like this felt like just not good.
Once again, it's proving that although DC has great property to work with,
Yeah.
You know, competent directors, writers, and actors.
Yeah.
For some reason, they cannot seem to pull anything together.
What's going on? Who's monkeying with everything that's fucking everything up?
I don't know.
Who can be blamed for everything?
Somebody's fucking around.
Is it a Zack Snyder thing? Is it a Jeff Johns thing?
I don't know who it is. Somebody's fucking around, Chris.
Someone's fucking around. Someone's fucking around, and they're fucking with the shit, and now it's all fucked up. Because it's not good.
Yeah, I mean...
Man of Steel so far has been the best movie of all the new DC movies.
And that wasn't that good.
And technically, it wasn't even part of the DCU thing. They retconned it to make it a part of their
thing.
Like Iron Man, like the first Iron Man.
And, I mean, in all reality, the best part of that movie, I think, was all the fucking Russell Crowe stuff.
The very beginning?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, it was fucking amazing.
You know who's hoping that you would keep thinking that? The Sci-Fi Channel when they make that Krypton TV show.
Are they going to do it with Russell Crowe?
Probably not.
I'm not interested.
I can't afford Russell Crowe. Are you kidding me? They can't afford to pay for him to have his personal chef flown in every day to feed him his delicious lobster bisques and other fatty foods that he obviously enjoys.
Yeah. So that's our...
this movie's just not that good. It's a bummer that it's not that good.
That's our top five.
Isn't that a bunch of bullshit? After like all said, that time and all that hype and all that marketing?
This summer's quote-unquote blockbusters have been pretty piss poor.
So the best ones have been Civil War at the beginning of the summer.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, wasn't bad.
And,
I mean, hell, Ghostbusters was better than Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Totally.
Yes.
Yeah, I was enjoying Ghostbusters. No. Suicide Squad, I was like, what?
I was trying to enjoy it, goddammit.
What are these bad guy things?
I was really trying to enjoy it.
They're like blobby.
I tried.
Yeah, I wanted to. I really wanted to, and the movie was like that, really trying to be like, no, you don't want to like me. I'm like, I guess so.
Yeah, whatever. Suicide Squad.
New movie is coming out on DVD, guys. Oh, wait, what's the Rotten Tomatoes stuff, actually?
Ooh, all right, hang on.
We got to get all that information. I'm sure it is... As one of the and that's good. Drew, all right.
Wow.
Drew just jizzed. Okay,
they were fucking brutal.
So what do we got?
26%.
Out of how many reviews?
245.
So out of 245 reviews, about 50 of them are positive.
63.
That's not good.
Average rating 4.7 out of 10. Suicide Squad boasts a talented cast and a little more humor than previous DCEU efforts.
Talk about Batman vs. Superman.
But they aren't enough to save the disappointing end result from a muddled plot, thinly written characters, and choppy directing.
Yeah, all that's true. It's all there. It's all there. What a bummer.
Yeah.
What a weird bummer of a movie. That stinks.
Yep.
That stinks. New movies come out on DVD. We have Hologram for the King. The new Tom Tykwer.
Oh, yeah.
With Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Came out the summer. Came out at the beginning of the summer. It's a little fanfare. A couple of trailers, a little fanfare. Went away. I think the reviews for it were okay. That's pretty much it. Let's come out in theaters.
Oh, in theaters, we've got Pete's Dragon.
The marketing for that's been pretty good. I kind of want to see that.
It's got Robert Redford.
It's got Robert Redford. It's got Bryce Dallas Howard. I think it looks good, actually. Mm. I have no interest in... I had no interest, I should say... in a Peach Dragon live action version or whatever. I didn't care at all about it, but the marketing's kind of sucked me in a bit. I'm interested.
It is Dread V Dragon, so.
And it is Dread V Dragon as well, that's correct. Mm-hmm. The scowlier he is, the better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also coming out this week, mm-hmm. Florence Foster Jenkins.
That movie looks terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Really bad. I recognize I'm not the target audience for either. I think even considering that, it just looks really bad. Based on a true story?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about this.
Piece of shit.
We'll see about this, Meryl Streep.
Also coming out this week.
Well, it's coming out this week.
Hell or High Water.
That's
Ben Foster flick.
That's for sure a Select Cities deal. I know for sure because I just saw a TV commercial that said that. Yep. But yeah, a modern day Western type thing with Ben Foster and who? Chris Pine.
Yeah, Chris Pine.
And
Captain Kirk.
And the dude.
Yeah. The dude.
You know the old dude? The big Lebowski? Jeffrey Lebowski? Not the dude, but the big Lebowski?
Yeah.
That guy just died.
Aww.
That actor. Yeah.
Shame.
What else come out?
Anthropoid. That, based on the extraordinary true story of Operation Anthropoid, the World War II mission to assassinate SS General Reinhard Heydrich. the main architect behind the final solution in Reich's third in command after Hitler and Himmler.
That sounds fun.
We saw a preview for it in front of something.
We did?
I did.
You did.
I don't know what.
I didn't.
I saw a preview for it. It looks interesting. I was like, who, World War II again? Yeah, at least it's something new. It's a plot to kill somebody that I didn't know.
True. True.
And last but certainly not least, Chris.
I definitely don't remember seeing that. Okay, go ahead.
Sausage Party.
Sausage Party. All right, there we go. That's what I'm talking about. I'm looking forward to seeing that ridiculous looking movie. Hopefully that one is okay. Just be watchable.
Exactly.
The way the summer's been going.
Hopefully it pans out.
That looks like fun, though. The marketing's been good.
The marketing's been good. I'm really...
Hopefully they've held back a lot of jokes and stuff.
Yeah, no, exactly. I'm interested to see how it all plays out.
Yeah. R-rated, For Annapurna Pictures, what's her name? Megan Ellison. She said that she wants Sausage Party to be Annapurna Pictures' first franchise.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she's got great taste.
She's got great taste.
And if it works, then totally. I mean, I'm down.
If this works, then expect Sausage Parties 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. That's the Annapurna version of branching out into.
We're making weird rated R adult animated movies.
Yeah, they're crazy. I love them over there. They're awesome. All right, guys. You know what time it is. True, you know what time it is?
Mm-hmm.
I hope so, because it is time for. Your two cents, or everyone is Dr. Drew's two cents.
You must be Doc Holliday.
Well, that's the rumor.
Dr. Strangelove, do we have anything like that in the works?
They call me Dr. Manhattan.
And Bridget Fonda.
Do doctors know more about... sex.
Doc Hollywood.
Dr. Drew, take it away.
All right, Chris. So I'm going to ask you a simple question, and you can give me a simple yes or no answer.
Okay.
Do you know how to properly use an escalator?
Yes. And I feel like this is a trick.
And how do you do that, Chris? How do you use the escalator?
You get on it.
Uh-huh.
And then you walk up it.
Uh-huh.
Then you get off it.
Uh-huh. So you get on the escalator.
Get on the escalator.
You continue to walk up the stairs the stairs are moving.
Walk upstairs.
And then you get there faster.
And then you get off.
And then you get off. And why is it every time I try to use an escalator properly, mm-hmm. I have assholes standing in my way using it like an elevator?
Oh, because it's so, it's like, oh, this thing's just carrying me up the stairs like a baby. It's taking me to the next level.
That's not what escalators are for. Escalators are moving stairs. You're supposed to continue using the stairs as you go up and down them on the escalator. I'm not sure if everybody knows how to use an escalator properly, so I just thought I'd put that out there.
Does that mean when people use elevators, they should be doing jumping jacks when it's on its way up?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Because an elevator is a moving floor. These are moving stairs. You're supposed to continue using them as stairs. I'm just putting that out there.
Okay.
The doctor is out.
Oh, snap. There we go, guys. Let's take a quick break. Crespo Disco time. I am going to play... perhaps one of the most memorable, most endearing and enduring movie themes of all time. I mean, if this doesn't...
John Carpenter's main intro to Escape from New York.
So close, so close. I've used that before, though. Doo-doo. I've played that before, so I can't. No, this is a song that, you know, if you listen to it and then you just shut off the show and then go accomplish all your goals and dreams for the rest of your life, I would not be surprised. That's how inspiring this music is. Guys, I hope you enjoy it.
John Williams?
This is from Robert Fulk. His name is Robert Fulk, and it is the main theme to the Police Academy soundtrack. We'll be back with the second half of the show in a minute. Drew, are you ready?
Yes.
All right, let's do this. We'll be right back.
is Eric from Talking Nonsense with Eric and Stacy. Join us every Sunday, 9 p.m. Central on alt360radio.com. We're talking news, idiot politicians, movies, TV, Darwin Award nominees, comedy, sports. We're basically two married idiots turning brain thoughts into mouth words. That's Talking Nonsense every Sunday, 9 p.m. Central on alt360radio.com. If you missed the show live, grab the podcast at ericandstacyradio.com, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes.
It's your 100th show, Cinema Crespo Diesel. And we want you and Drew to know, we really, 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 really dig it. It's your 100th show, Cinema Crespo Diesel. And we want you and Drew to know, we really dig it. Oh, you, oh, and you and Drew get aroused by previews. And now, both of you, oh, we smell like popcorn. It's your 100th show, Cinema Crespo Diesel. And to the movies we go, primarily because you pick them.
There you go.
Thank you. Hey,
that was awesome. Yeah.
Thank you, Curtis. That was fantastic.
Welcome to the Crespo Show.
We are back. 187 is on their way once more. It is me, Andrew Sakagra. Andrew, how's it going?
Dude.
All right,
dude.
Let's get the plugs out of the way. Where can people find you online?
At Antihero419, all over the interwebs.
That's right, people. Tweet Drew at Antihero419 your favorite Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas gifs. Send it to him your favorite ones.
Somebody sent me a Watchmen gif.
So it's the Watchmen.
It was Ron.
There you go.
It was Ron.
Got your Watchmen gif.
It was a good one.
You got your RoboCop gif.
Yeah, the RoboCop one.
That's happening this week. Let's do Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, guys. Send your favorite clips to him at Antihero419 on Twitter and other places on the internet. Follow the show on Twitter at Crespo Diesel and Facebook, Cinema Crespo Diesel. Instagram, Cinema Crespo Diesel. So follow me on Twitter at I am Chris Crespo.
Liar. No, you're not.
Shout outs to the top downloads for the month of July 2016. Outside of Florida is obviously your number one download in the U.S. Not counting Florida, but that's obviously number one. Outside of Florida, top 10 in the U.S. downloads, number one for July, 1 through 10. Iowa, California, New York.
Iowa,
number one.
Who the fuck is downloading our show in Iowa?
Someone's digging us in Iowa. Iowa, California, New York, Georgia, Texas, Illinois, New Jersey, Washington, D.C., Tennessee, and Missouri. Shouts all you guys. Top 10 downloads internationally. Number one, UK. Doesn't split it up.
Just the UK.
It's just the entire UK. Number two, Canada. Three, France, Netherlands, Germany, Australia, Sweden, New Zealand, Iran, and Japan. Thank you guys for downloading. We appreciate it. You guys are the best. Any other plugs? What else we got to plug?
Take our stickers so we can make more.
Take our stickers. We're going to make more. It's happening soon. And then we'll be sending you new stickers that are actually going to be sticker business cards.
Have we decided?
I thought we did.
Okay.
Yeah. Business card stickers. Okay. They're 2-in-1. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. See how they work. Mm-hmm. I think they will.
Of course.
So here we go, guys. They're happening. We're rolling them out. It's getting done. It's going to be the thing that all the kids are going to be into. Also, go to chriscrespo.com to check out movie reviews. If you go there this past week and for next week or so, there are old movie reviews that I'm reposting because apparently when I wrote for Examiner for a few years, they recently switched over to something new. And if you go to any old link to my reviews for any old reviews that I wrote on Examiner, it just takes you some generic landing page for their new website. They're all gone. So I take that as a sign that it's they don't want them anymore. They don't need them. So the few couple dozen that I had saved on my computer, I reposted them.
There you go.
They're scheduled to all come out one a day for the next week or so. People can check that out. So if you see a bunch of movie reviews from movies from 2011,
you know why.
And 2012, this is why. Don't be confused. It all makes sense. There's a explanation for practically everything. Let us start with Billy Dee's death at the movies. How does that sound, Drew?
Whatever you say, Ross.
Billy Dee is our New York City senior correspondent, horror film aficionado. It's a separate every week, and we read his reviews, his whatever he has to say, his missives. Well, Drew reads them. I sit here and listen. Dr. Drew, take it away.
What is up, my dudes?
What's up, Billy?
I had the pleasure of attending a screening at the Brooklyn Academy of Music Cinema Complex. This is the same campus I saw the Ty West Western at a few weeks ago. In the same theater I saw the Devil In with Min Suk Choi and Ji Woo Kim. The darkest theater ever, according to friend of the show Tim. The BAM complex is awesome, and I recommend seeing movies there as often as possible for my NYC homies. This week I got to see a rare cut of one of my favorite movies of all time with one of my favorite directors in attendance. The quote-unquote preview cut of Gremlins is a scratchy, dusty as fuck, glorious 35mm. This is not a director's cut. Joe Dante doesn't prefer this version over the theatrical cut. It's just what the test audiences saw before the final edit.
Interesting.
There is about 5 additional minutes of footage, alternate takes, and alternate music cues. It's also a 30-year-old movie, so you know, spoilers. You guys are well aware of my Gremlins love, Mogwai. It might be the first movie I saw in a theater. It's the first movie I remember seeing that scared me, and it's something I watched at it. And it's something I watched an insane amount of time in college. Every frame of this movie is familiar to me, so this was a unique experience. Additional scenes involved Judge Reinhold's character. One cut scene was a whole subplot involving Mrs. Deagle's plans for the town. And one in the bank vault, where he's gone a little crazy and locked himself in to survive the attack. Huh. There were a couple added scenes with the dad on the road. Also, one big change to the end of the film, where Billy pulls the string on the blinds, defeating Stripe instead of Gizmo. That was the biggest change I noticed, and one of the 2 big changes that Spielberg asked for personally. Originally, Gizmo was supposed to become Stripe. But Spielberg was super in love with Gizmo and thought that Gizmo should be in the whole movie.
Yeah, sure.
He made that decision as they started filming or shortly before, which is why he's in the backpack and in close-up most of the time. They never accounted for him being in the movie that much, so they didn't build models that walked. During the Q&A, the question of another film came up, and would he use CGI or practical effects? And his answer was probably one of the best that I've ever heard. He acknowledged that CGI is a powerful tool and that he uses it and would have used it on Gremlins if it were available, but he would also use practical effects for most things, just embellished with CG because, quote, you don't get Corey Feldman to talk to a spot on the wall like it's a puppy. He's doing that because Gizmo is right there on the bed reacting to him,
yeah.
End quote.
That's true.
He also said he would not do another Gremlins picture. The Gremlins were close in design to what Chris Columbus sketched out and sent with the script. Gizmo was only approved by Spielberg when they made him the same color as his dog. Dante thinks this is why Spielberg was so into Gizmo. He said this was a grueling shoot, and they did 3 weeks of photography with actors, took 2 weeks off, and then did a month of shooting with Gremlins. The studio didn't like Kate's story about her dad and the chimney, and that was one big thing he fought for. Spielberg said, "I don't get it, but it's your movie." Dante was gracious and remarked about how special it is that 32 years after Gremlins was released, an auditorium of people would gather on a Friday night in New York City to see it and still laugh at the right moments and gasp and everything. He still gets a kick out of watching the Gremlins movies with audiences. Totally rad experience for me, and I'm glad I got to see this. Stay cool, Billy Dee.
Very cool. Look at that. Billy Dee reporting from the preview cut screening of the original Gremlins, which 1982, we're talking about a lot of years ago.
And Joe Dante was there.
We got reporting, we got some quotes from the Q&A afterwards. Thank you. That is what a New York City correspondent, senior correspondent, that's what a senior correspondent does. Hit up Billy on Twitter at I Love Blood to thank him for the report. He is the best. Thank you, Billy. Good stuff there. I'm assuming you did not get a chance to slip him the copy of Mogwai that I'm sure you had with you at the time, but it's cool. He said he'd never make another Gremlins. Yeah. He didn't say he wouldn't make a Mogwai movie.
Hey, he said he would never make a Gremlins movie. That just means you guys can.
Get on that. If we don't know what we're talking about, I don't know which episode to point you to. I'm sorry, there's just too many episodes now to...
Yeah, I'm sure you can tweet both Chris and at I Love Blood about their Mogwai script, and they'll probably talk about it.
Or you can Google it. It'll come up somehow, I swear. Cinema Crest with Iso, Mogwai story idea.
Something like that.
Perchance.
I think so. I do love Gremlins. That is a fantastic movie.
It is. No, I agree.
You know, that second one's always... When I was really young, I liked it, but watching it now, it's like a bummer.
Not even when I was real young did I like it. It was weird.
It's weird and not very good. They try to make it, they did make it into such a comedy. And it's like, man, I liked that first one. I was like a little creepy. And it's a horror movie, you know? And then they got away from that from the sequel. So anyway, thank you, Billy D. We appreciate that very much. You are awesome. Okay, let's do the segment of the people. That is the Vox Populi.
That moment you've all been waiting for. The world famous
Vox Populi. Vox Populi. Vox Populi. Vox Populi.
You can hit us up. There was a pause there. You can hit us up on email, cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com, Facebook, cinemacrespodiso, Twitter, @crespodiso, and we will read your reviews, your missives, your questions, your topic suggestions, your Crespodome battles on the show. Like I said, Drew Zakar, read them. I'll sit here and listen, Drew.
We got an email from Scott, Chris.
What's up, Scott?
We got some movie haikus and reviews.
Oh,
we're
going
to start off
this time. Drew.
Chris.
We'll do this and then we'll get to Scott's email. You are 11-7.
Mm-hmm.
This game is called Reverse Multiple Personality Disorder.
Okay.
I'm going to name three actors.
I gave the movie?
No, you tell me the role that they all have in common. So we're talking about the same role in a movie,
okay.
In different movies.
Okay, so you're going to say George Clooney, Val Kilmer, and what's his face? Fucking, sure. Anybody else that was Batman, I could say Batman.
That's,
and that would work.
That's the answer to no. No, but yes, correct. Yes. Absolutely, 100%. Yeah, that's the way the game is played. Okay. So here we go. Number one, Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger, Jared Leto.
Joker.
That's correct. Number two. Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, Daniel Craig.
007.
That's correct. I've also accepted James Bond. Number three. Aaron Thomas, Brian Cox, Anthony Hopkins.
Hannibal Lecter?
Hannibal Lecter is correct. So number four. Benjamin Walker, Will Forte, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Will Forte and Daniel Day-Lewis play the same character?
Yep. What? This is the world we live in, Drew.
What?
This is the world we live in. Benjamin Walker, Will Forte, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Like, I can't even fathom that. Abraham Lincoln?
That's correct.
Holy shit.
Benjamin Walker is Abraham Lincoln vampire. Will Forte was Abraham Lincoln in a Lego movie. Number five, Errol Flynn. Carrie Elways. Oh, I see that. Kevin Costner. Errol Flynn, Carrie Elways. Kevin Costner.
Wyatt Earp.
Ooh, Robin Hood. Robin Hood. Gary Elwes was Robin Hood Men in Tights. Mel Brooks. Princess Bride. Number six. Robert John Burke. Joel Kinnaman. Peter Weller.
Got no idea.
That is RoboCop. That is RoboCop. Number seven, Henry Cavill, Christopher Reeve.
Superman.
Number eight, Michael Shannon, Bruce Campbell, Val Kilmer.
Elvis.
That's correct. Number nine, Denzel Washington, Mario Van Peebles, Nigel Thatch. Denzel Washington, Mario Van Peebles, Nigel Thatch.
I don't know.
Malcolm X.
Oh, I was about to say it, but I was like, there's no way Mario Van Peebles played Malcolm X.
In Ali, he was a fantastic Malcolm X.
Really?
In Michael Mann's Ali, yes. And number 10, finally, Christian Bale, Richard Gere, Kate Blanchett. They all play the same character. Christian Bale, Richard Gere, Kate Blanchett. Who do they play in a movie? In movies. In a movie. What if I add Heath Ledger to that list? Christian Bale, Heath Ledger, Kate Blanchett, Richard Gere.
What? Now, you confused me even more.
What if I added Ben Whishaw to that list?
Okay, now I'm super confused. I have no idea.
Bob Dylan.
Oh, I should have known Kate Blanchett played Bob. I should have known.
In that movie, I'm Not There. They all played Bob Dylan in the same movie, I'm Not There. Where Bob Dylan was played by like five or six
I've
different
I've seen
actors.
That movie, Chris. I think I
saw it at the end. I think you were there.
Don't remember Christian Bale or Heath Ledger being in that movie. Yeah. But okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Wild, crazy, wild stuff. Yeah. Crazy, wild stuff. Vox Populi time.
That moment you've all been waiting for.
Take it away, Drew.
So, like I said, we've got Star Trek Beyond Haiku.
Okay.
Review.
Okay.
Beasties Save Yorktown. Besties?
Besties.
Besties Save Yorktown. A lot of ho-hum stuff before then. Besties Save Yorktown. Y'all know I'm a big Trek fan. Don't worry, no tangents. And I really enjoyed the two previous Trek reboot flicks. Each one had its flaws, but I found both to be very enjoyable and very rewatchable. But right now, I just cannot envision myself really wanting to see Star Trek Beyond ever again.
Oh.
It did have a few moments I enjoyed. The classical music was probably my favorite. But that's kinda sad to admit. The soundtrack being my favorite part of the Trek movie, not a good sign. The big reveal about who the villain is and why he was doing what he was doing, I liked that quite a bit too. It was very DS9, no tangents, and I liked the J'la character a lot. She was a badass even without blade feet, but also funny without trying to be funny. She reminded me of Drax from Guardians in that respect.
Drax, but not Xander Drax from Phantom.
Correct. But the rest was just so blah. It seemed to take forever to get to the end, to the parts that I found interesting and or enjoyable, with J'la occasionally keeping things going when the middle lulled, and boy did it lull. The villain's super weapon was never really explained. What's it do? Kill everyone somehow? Okay. Something so deplorable that an alien race felt it was necessary to be dismantled and scattered across deep space. I don't know. I was expecting more meat from that pork chop. And even though I loved the soundtrack, the fact that it became a critical plot point really irked me. When Star Trek First Contact had Magic Carpet Ride and Ooby Dooby in the mix, they were just cute little accents with a great story. But Roy Orbison didn't save the fucking day. I mean, the Beastie Boys saved the universe.
I like how the Beastie Boys saved the universe.
Lazy writing, I don't want to say it, but is this Simon Pegg's fault? if he was only there to beef up the funny, then I guess he did all right. Beyond did have some good funny interpersonal moments between characters, but as for a solid plot, a good story, that's what I found Beyond lacking a lot.
So he sides a lot with you there. He didn't like it very much, and he seemed quite bored with it. He said he'll never revisit it ever again, so all right.
Next up, Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
We'll start off with the haiku.
The haiku. Okay, there. Haiku. Here we go.
Females busting ghosts. Cracking jokes and kicking ass. Childhood still intact. Unless you really are just a sexist asshole, I can't imagine anyone finding this Ghostbusters to be anything but fun, entertaining, and worthy of its name.
Yeah.
Wig and McCarthy have their usual amazing chemistry. Those two just play great off each other no matter what. I don't think they could fuck up a script, any script, even if they tried. I'm a big Leslie Jones fan. Some aren't, but I am. So I really dug what she added to the team. But Kate McKinnon steals the damn show.
Yeah.
She does so much with only her facial expressions.
Mm-hmm.
Give her no lines at all, and she will still add something funny to any scene. And the lines she did have, a lot of it was technobabble nonsense, but she delivered it perfectly and with an almost psychotic enthusiasm.
Yep.
You could tell her, you could tell that her character relished creating those awesome little weapons for her fellow busters. They were awesome weapons. That climactic battle sequence was fantastic, and it was made all the more exciting with the new arsenal of gadgets and how the characters used them in the fight. It's not just proton packs anymore. The scene was shot really well, too. The CG looked great. There was just the right amount of slow-mo used for effect, and the actors all pulled off the physicality of it quite well. For a few minutes, this comedy became a legit action flick. Honorable mention, or rather, honor among thievesable mention, to Chris Hemsworth, who also stole the show. So fucking funny.
Fatality.
Yeah, I gotta agree. I agree with all that. Yeah, I mean, Hemsworth was great. It's a fun movie. McKinnon was great.
Mm-hmm. And last but certainly not least,
I think we're Ghostbusters fans here around the Cinema Crespedia Studio.
Suicide Squad haiku and review.
Suicide Squad haiku and review.
Have a time.
All right, you ready?
I found a soundboard.
If Taylor Swift's squad.
Wait. I'm sorry. Start again. Start over.
If Taylor Swift's squad hung out with Suicide Squad, now that's a sequel. And I do want a sequel.
I'm sorry, man. I know it's a joke. I can't abide by anything Taylor Swift related. Okay, go ahead, Drew.
And I do want a sequel.
Okay.
Because Suicide Squad was a lot of fun.
Yeah, enjoyed it. Here we go. Let's hear it.
And this cast, these characters deserve a sequel, even if Bruce Wayne thinks otherwise. Fuck you, Bruce.
Yeah, he was all like, I'm going to shut you down.
As SBK once said, you're just a dude with a Home Depot card. Without a doubt, the most succinct evisceration of a superhero ever. I still remember the Diet Pepsi I was drinking, which I immediately spit out laughing when I heard him say that on SBK Live years ago. Suicide Squad works because the cast is great and because they all commit to their characters. Will Smith is solid as the de facto leader of the Misfits. He brings stability to the chaos, but still plenty of Will Smithery. Jay Hernandez is cool, irony, as the pacifist with the most firepower of anybody. Jai Courtney and his crazy eyes were good as Boomerang. Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't this role Tom Hardy's before?
Yep.
Backed out?
Yep. He had a good Revenant.
I can only think Hardy would have done better, because he simply is better.
Yes.
But Courtney did a job well.
He did okay. Yeah, for sure.
Even the dude behind all that croc makeup managed to turn that into a charismatic, root-worthy character.
At a Wally Akujumbe Abuhas or something. The guy from Lost. Mm-hmm. And the Thing prequel, that was terrible.
And Joel Kinnaman pulls off the American-made G-Man to a T. Viola Davis, what are you even doing in this movie? Oh, just being a cold-as-fuck government bitch dick who pulls all the strings and gets shit done? Yeah, she's fucking awesome.
She is awesome. She's slumming and getting paid and being awesome. She's probably my favorite part of that movie. I love Viola Davis.
But let's be real. Margot Robbie, Jared Leto, Harley Quinn, Joker, talk about committing. Was Suicide Squad just a 2-hour trailer for their spin-off franchise? If so, I'm 100% okay with that. Though Harley was so much fun as part of the squad, I hope she stays. Joker 2, if that's even possible. I still eagerly await her next gag, her next swing of the bat, her next anything. Bravo! And Leto, wow.
Leto!
Earlier this week, Doug Benson tweeted that they should have retired the Joker role with Heath Ledger's passing, and I agreed with him at the time. But Leto, damn. He made me rethink that stance. Mm. It's a very different Joker than Heath's, playing a lot of new and unexpected notes compared to Dark Knight. Mm. But I think Leto's is every bit as crazy, terrifying, and fascinating, mm. while still being a wholly unique Joker. If Ledger was still alive, had we not already enshrined him for this one exceptional role, I think Leto's performance would spark a real debate about who did Joker better. I don't know who I'd vote for. Time to watch Killing Joke on demand? Question marks. Now to the bad. The weakest thing about this movie is its villain, and thus the plot.
Yeah, that's what we were saying, the villain and the plot. Those are pretty big things. It's cool that you like the movie so much, but those are two pretty big things. But like, I don't know about the villain and the plot.
When the squad are doing their thing, they're great. The twist that pops up during their mission, I thought, was really clever and added a lot of tension and drama. Uh-huh. But every time I saw the story shift to Enchantress and her lame-ass brother, that's where the movie loses its momentum.
Yeah.
I don't know. When Elizabeth Olsen waved her arms around in CGI to be added later mode in Ultron, it looked ethereal and fascinating, even beautiful. But when Cara de blah 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 blah
Cara the villain of the movie.
Yeah. Waves her arms, waiting for the post-production work to kick in, it just looks awkward and stupid. Maybe because her whole storyline is just awkward, stupid, and kind of worthless. The dialogue doesn't help her either. Tell me how to destroy your armies. Come on, man. What kind of self-respecting supervillain has to ask that question?
That was such a funny line of dialogue. Oh my god, I forgot about when she's like, tell me how to destroy your armies. My response would be like, no one knows that answer to that. That's $1 million question. How do you destroy the armies? So funny.
Not to say I'm blaming whatever her face is.
Kara the villain.
Though, her part was as human doctor, her relationship with Kinnaman, that stuff was good. Even her brief stints as the dirty witch enchantress were super creepy and compelling. It was only when she got shined up when she became the big bad that the story let her and ultimately the movie down.
Yeah.
It's because my expectations were so high before being brought down so low the last week. Mm-hmm. Or maybe because DC's track record has been awful. But all in all, I think Suicide Squad hits, and I see multiple ways in which it could be continued and improved upon.
Okay.
That is, unless Bruce has his way. Fuck you, Bruce Wayne. KidneyForKevin.com. Take care, guys.
KidneyForKevin.com for sure. 100% KidneyForKevin.com. I did like... That I totally forgot about that line. That is a super funny line. How you tell me how to destroy your army?
Yeah, but afterwards, she's talking to somebody who's high up in government stuff. So she was basically just tracking her mind because all of a sudden it was taking down like black ops sites and sites that how do they even know that that satellite place exists?
And it was just a laser that was traveling across the earth. That was
exactly
so
and then she was hung upside down with some weird cord in her head.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. But that's still a dumb question. How to destroy your armies? And I remembered in the middle of all that when Katana, the Japanese chick, shows up to the rest of Suicide Squad for the first time, and Harley Quinn is like, that's a wonderful perfume you're wearing. Is that the scent of death? Mm-hmm. And she has like a huge smile the whole time. That was super funny. That was really funny. And I thought it was the best, but I forgot. So there you go. Scott liked it.
Let's see what Gabriel has to say about it.
What's up, homeboy?
Bro.
It
ain't bad.
Oh, about Suicide Squad? Getting bad. So he likes it.
I have to.
Two in a row? This is what I'm talking about. This is what the Vox Populi is all about. I shouldn't be hitting the table because the microphones are attached to it. My bad, people.
I have to admit my feelings on this went from an oh great, but how are they going to ruin Batman now, to feverish anticipation the closer we got.
Mm-hmm.
The more trailers came out, and the more crazy Jared Leto stories I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, folks, this movie is harmless in its formulaic presentation. I did enjoy the opening and the colors, the quote-unquote hero designs, and the movie overall. Ayer did his thing. It reminded me of the first Thor movie, but lighter and not taking itself too seriously.
You're right there, Gassy, but you want to take a breath? All that cream soda with the limoncello. You're dipping in the lemon heads again.
I never felt there was a real danger, but I was satisfied. Will Smith took steps towards bandaging his recent reputation with his performance, and I enjoyed Margot Robbie and Viola Davis especially.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, I wanted more Joker. Mm-hmm. I got unstable Kingpin, but not dangerously menacing. I wanted him to be Shere Khan, Pacing Tiger, kind of dangerous, but maybe more to come with Harley Quinn's sequel. Anyways, worth a one-time watch with the family, and if you're worried...
With the family, you crazy!
And if you're worried, Matinee works too. Not the funniest thing this year, not the best action, not the top movie of the year so far, but solid. See it.
No, he liked it, so there you go. We got two in a row from the people that they like it. So, there you go. You just gotta make up your own mind. Go out there, see it, and see what you think.
On Twitter, Mr. Nathan has a Suicide Squad mini-review.
What's up, Nathan?
Maybe the reviews lowered my expectations, but I actually enjoyed it.
Look at this. It's 3 for 3.
It's a fun, mindless film.
What is this?
Leto makes a menacing Joker, but leaves the humor, unfortunately. I'd say see it in theater if there is any interest. It's not so bad.
Not so bad.
But you see, here's what I see, Chris. I see three people telling us that it's not so bad, and not one of them said it was good.
Yeah, but you know what? On Rotten Tomatoes, that's 3 positive reviews. That's 100% rotten score. 100%. 3 not so bad reviews.
I'm just saying, not so bad is not good.
There you go. Scott seemed to like it more than not so bad. He was just saying that the villain and the plot weren't that great. Okay, now I remember what I wanted to say. So yes, he was 100% right about how at the end, Kara, whatever her name is, she's like gyrating around, yeah, and she has a CG around her. It was so awkward, and I can't help every time you see stuff like that. And he also mentioned Elizabeth Olsen in Age of Ultron, like her handwork and stuff. Yeah, like very complex handwork. Yeah. Like I can't help but feel like, I know these people are getting paid really well. I still can't help but feel like a little sorry for them that one day on set they had to wear a ridiculous costume and in front of like 150 people act like an asshole for like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. And like, I know it's for a movie and you'll barely even see it. And I'll be surrounded by CG and the shot will last 5 seconds. But for the next 3 hours, I feel like a dickhead moving my fingers around like this in front of like the fucking the gaffers and the grips and all these union dudes, right? Wearing my fucking tights and shit. There's a funny gif that I see on Twitter sometimes. It's Cumberbatch and EG4 in their Doctor Strange outfits, and like three other people in Doctor Strange crazy Asian get-ups, right? And they're laying on the floor on the street in New York City, and it's just like a bright day in New York City. They're on the street, and it's just New York City. And then they pop up out of the ground, and they kind of do like a hop. And they have their hands like they're like floating. Yeah, but like a fairy hop. It looks very dainty.
Yeah.
EG4 looks especially dainty. And I can already picture just the way they get up out of the ground, the way they land. Like, I bet you they're going to be coming out of like a portal, like a boom hole. And they're like, shit, they're appearing. Just be all the CG stuff. But from the set, it just looks like two dudes in terrible outfits prancing. Jumping up off the ground and then prancing real quick. Yeah. And it's very, very silly looking. And yeah, that makes me laugh.
Sweet.
It makes me laugh. I just want to say that. Thanks, Nathan.
All right, on the Facebook.
Get us on Facebook, yo.
Paul Hine got at
us. What's up, Paul Hine?
He's got a review for Last Days in the Desert.
Oh, the Ewan McGregor is Jesus for 40 days in the desert and the devil. I want to see it.
Obi-Wan Kenobi stumbles through the desert upon a distressed family. As he watches the family fall apart, he hallucinates and has conversations with himself. The McGregor on McGregor interaction is by far the best part, and everything else is just kind of boring.
Mm.
A few worthless weeks in the life of Jesus in the desert.
A few worthless weeks.
Yes.
Of Jesus in the desert.
Uh-huh.
Okay, fair enough. Baseball.
And Ron from LA got at us.
What's up, Ron?
He asks, Simba Crespedito, have you seen this? The Honest Trailers Watchmen.
Oh, yeah. I'm not a big fan of those Honest Trailers things or the...
I don't even know what they are.
It's like, there's that, and there's Cinema Sins, and there's a couple of people that put out these video essays. And it's just like, you know, kind of shitting on a movie for the most part. And pointing out everything that they don't like about it, or logically. And I don't know. It's like,
I mean,
I don't like watching movies that way, obviously. I don't like movies, so...
I mean, I really like Watchmen, but there are some things I don't like about that movie.
Sure, of course. So we're going to be honest about it 100%. It could be better. Most movies can be better in different ways. Still like that movie very, very much. One of my favorites. So there you go. That's it for Vox Populi.
That's it.
Thank you very much, people. We appreciate it. You guys are the best. Got some movie news here. We're talking about Suicide Squad. This is from the Hollywood Reporter. There was a report that came out this week, just ahead of the movie being released, Drew, that Suicide Squad suffered from studio interference.
Okay.
So here we go.
So they're already blaming people.
Well, yeah. Well, someone has to be blamed for this. Citing multiple sources close to the production. Get this true. WB brought in multiple editors, uncredited in the final version of the film, to piece together a, quote, lighter, studio-favored version that was shown to test audiences alongside David Ayer's, quote, more somber version. Ayer agreed to and participated in the process. And since the movie has come out and this report has come out, David Ayer said, the cut that's in theaters, it's his cut. He stands by it. So he's playing cool. He's not blaming anyone. He's like, if you don't like the movie, then it's on me. So he's not blaming studio interference. But apparently there was some. In the wake of the first test screenings in which the studio-favored version with more characters introduced early in the film and jazzed-up graphics won. Remember all those jazzed-up graphics we saw? WB decided to invest millions of dollars in additional photography to try and find the right tone for the movie. According to some sources, the struggle to find the right tone involved, quote, a lot of panic and ego instead of calmly addressing the tonal issue. David Ayer became very stressed by the process. This is also interesting. That was not helped by the fact that Warner Brothers decided to pass up on his follow-up film, Bright, 2 weeks before test screening. So he brought his next film to WB before Suicide Squad was even done, and they were like, you know what, we don't want to make your next movie with you.
Sorry.
Bright has been since been picked up by Netflix, and they've picked up the $90 million price tag, and that's that cuff procedural with Will Smith and someone weird like Ryan Gosling, or not him, but someone, maybe Ryan Reynolds. Maybe I'm just saying it because of the RIPD thing, but it's cops, New York City cops, but during the world, they're like orcs and fairies and shit, too. It's like fantasy cops thing. Weird.
I'm
weird
totally okay with that.
It sounds crazy. It's going to be a Netflix movie. So Ayer was under a lot of pressure from the studio, and during reshoots and post-production was exhausted, needed time to process conflicting ideas. One source said that the main credited editor had actually left by the end of editing, that the final editor was the dude who did the Green Hornet. So the guy when it said edited by his name on there, he wasn't even the final editor of the film. It's very similar to like what happened with Fox with the Fantastic Four and the fighting about the content of the film and trying to find a version that the studio liked more than what the director wanted to do originally. So that could be part of the reason why, obviously, there. Yeah. If Ayer had his way, it would have been a much more somber movie.
I'm okay with that.
Might have been better. Yeah. Than this one that had almost 30 pop songs used as music cues. Last on the schedule, we got Wonder Woman, June
2017. Okay, next summer.
Justice League, November 2017.
Don't care about that.
Aquaman, July 2018.
So, two summer movies.
Shazam, April
2019. Shazam!
Justice League 2,
don't care.
June 2019. Cyborg, April 2020. Green Lantern Corps, July 2020.
That has potential.
Flash and Batman solo movies are currently without release dates, but they'll be way before that. Batman's probably 2018. Flash will probably be October 2018. Probably. So I'm looking forward to the Flash movie. And then I alluded to this earlier. The Jared Leto stuff. Mm-hmm. The Joker scenes that were cut.
Yes.
Okay. Dig this, Daddy-O. Variety.com, Jared Leto interview. Maybe he was drinking or something.
I hope so.
Halfway through, blah, 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 blah. But asked by IGN what happened in reference to halfway through the movie, Joker disappears.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't show up to the very end. This fucking, the Variety mobile site is terrible. When asked by IGN what happened to Joker disappearing, Jared Leto responded, "That's a good question. I have no idea," he said. "I think he," meaning Joker, "probably went and had a drink or something. Stretched. Once you get blown up in a helicopter, your muscles get a little tight." While Leto initially seemed calm, his poker face went away when asked if he was upset about the scenes being cut. Here's the gold, Drew. Jared Leto, quote, Were there any that didn't get cut? I'm asking you, were there any that didn't get cut? There were so many scenes that got cut from the movie, I couldn't even start. If I die anytime soon, it's probably likely that it'll surface somewhere. That's the good news about the death of an actor, is all that stuff seems to come out. So,
apparently lots of stuff got cut.
Lots of stuff got cut. David Ayer has also said that while this is his cut, there is no director's cut. The Blu-ray, the DVD release, will have 10 minutes of deleted scenes, deleted material. If you watch the trailer, there's a shot in the trailer where Jared Leto, Joker's half his face is all fucked up, mm-hmm. and he has a grenade and he pulls the pin with his mouth. That's on the movie.
No, not at all.
I think there's a scene where he fights the Suicide Squad.
There's a scene
towards the end that
where,
got cut. A whole battle that got cut.
Like there's a scene where like Batman's actually like doing like action stuff in the trailers. Like he's like diving or something, and Batman didn't do anything but stand.
I think there was less. Yeah, I think there's less Batman stuff, action stuff in the movie. There's some. There's that one car chase.
Yeah,
but for the most part, yeah, yeah. Batman. There's very little Batman in the movie. That's really a cameo for sure. So there you go. That's where there's some problems with the Suicide Squad. There's your reasons why. We were talking about. When did we meet? Did we talk about this? The Dunkirk trailer?
No.
Did we talk about that on the show?
Not on the show.
So that was the biggest surprise of. Did we see. What movie did we see that in front of?
Suicide Squad.
Was that in front of Suicide Squad? Biggest surprise in front of seeing Suicide Squad was getting to see the Dunkirk trailer.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I had no idea there was a teaser trailer about to drop. That's a plop on us.
Yeah.
And it's just like the Inception teaser trailer where it shows barely nothing. It's selling you on the fact that it's a new Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah.
And that it's...
75mm, 35mm IMAX.
Yeah, go see it on the biggest IMAX screen you can because it's all, you know, like the biggest, best technology possible that he used. It's a damn good trailer.
Yeah. I feel like all those poor bastards on that little boat get blown to shit.
A lot of those motherfuckers gonna die. A lot of those motherfuckers gonna die. That's for sure. We were talking about this off mic. We were having a non-official conversation about Dunkirk. How it's like we're kind of done. I've been done with war movies for a long time.
Oh, really? Especially World War II.
So over it, man. We get it. It's over. What other stories can you tell? Who else can make a movie that I want to see that's a World War II movie, right?
Apparently.
Here's Christopher Nolan. World War II next summer we're gonna be seeing one. But Drew, guess what? I think there's might be another one. I think there might be another one that we're gonna have to go see before that one even comes out, Drew. There's a film called Allied. Okay. And it's got these two people in it. If I can make it a little better, see? Here's the first official image from the movie Allied. Marion Cotillard
and Bradley Pitt.
And Brad Pitt are in a film called Allied, which is directed by Robert Zemeckis. He of the Back to the Futures and The Walk even his bad movies are still pretty damn good. This movie, Drew, is about... Oh, and also, the screenplay is by Stephen Knight, who's the guy who wrote and directed Locke and other... He wrote tons of great stuff. Mm-hmm. Stephen Knight's a very good, very good screenwriter. Allied takes place in 1942. Duh. Max Vatan, Brad Pitt, and Marion, whatever her name is, Marianne, played by Marion, are undercover allies who begin to fall for each other. Max is a British intelligence officer sent to Casablanca to plan an assassination attempt. He works with Marianne, a French resistance fighter who goes undercover as his wife.
Yeah. Sounds cool.
So it's a love story set around 1942 with Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard, written by the guy who wrote and directed Locke, and directed by Robert Zemeckis, who is a filmmaking master, mm-hmm. Hollywood legend. So that comes out in like November.
Cool.
So that's two World War II movies between now and next summer already.
Damn it.
You think you're done with it. You think you're done with the genre. I'm never going to see another goddamn war movie. You got those two plus Wonder Woman, secondly a World War One movie.
Oh yeah, it is.
Well, like how Captain America, that first one was a World War II movie. Because Hydra was the Nazi thing. And finally here we got this movie called Red Sparrow. Red Sparrow is a thriller. Mm-hmm. And it's starring Jennifer Lawrence. Joel Edgerton just signed on to do it. So those are your two leads. Directed by Francis Lawrence, guy who did Constantine and I Am Legend, and then did the three of the last four Hunger Games movies.
Okay.
Which is why he's working with Jennifer Lawrence again. At one point, this movie was had attracted David Fincher and Rooney Mara.
Really?
Yeah. But they have since dropped out. And now it's looking like it's a Francis Lawrence, Jennifer Lawrence spy movie called Red Sparrow. Lawrence will play Russian intelligence officer Dominika, you know, something Russian. A trained seductress. Mm-hmm. Sounds like fun. Her mission is to work against CIA officer Nathaniel Nash, whom Edgerton would presumably play, according to Deadline Hollywood. She ends up developing a dangerous relationship with her Mark, and she eventually joins Nash and CIA to help them uncover a rat on their side. So it's almost like
double agent.
It's almost like the opposite of Allied.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Double agent shit.
So there you go, some double agent shit with J-Law and Joe Edge, with the director Francis Law, and there we go.
Cool. Some of that J-Law, F-Law.
That's what we got. That's what we're looking at there. That's how it is.
Sweet.
So how about some Abo Dingas?
I don't think we have any Abo Dingas.
I think they're all Abo Dingas now.
Are they?
Yeah, for now on.
You just got to add raisins.
I know it's an Abo Dingas that's got raisins in it. All right, guys, that's the end of the episode. We appreciate it. Thank you very much, Drew. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Chris.
You can rate us and review us on iTunes and on Stitcher and do other things as well. So be excellent to each other. Break up the big banks. Read more books and free Mamiya Abu Jamal. We're out of here. We'll be back soon with more shits.
Shannon Kerfman from her Loud Guitars and Big Suspicions album, and that's The Weight. A lot of people think that's called Take a Load Off Annie, but it's called The Weight, originally done by the band Robbie Robertson, Levon Helm, and those fellas. I think it was on the album The Big Pink. By the way, in either case, you're listening to the Curtis Hurt Show here on WPRK. And up next, we have Chris Crespo from ChrisCrespo.com and Cinema Crespedizo. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good, Curtis. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling into the show. And let's talk movies.
Sure, man. I only saw one movie last weekend. The summer movie season is like officially winding down. The movies are petering out they are. Jason Bourne came out last weekend, and it was not good.
Is that becoming a tired franchise now? Do you think they've taken everything they can do with that?
I think it might be. I didn't think it was, but I think it might. I was very bored by this movie, and for me, that's the biggest sin a movie can commit. Be boring.
Right.
Don't be boring, you know? At least be bad enough to enrage me.
Right. Elicit some response. Some passion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, oh, man, it had a good car chase in the beginning. It had a good car chase towards the end. It's everything in the middle is just standard issue now. Born movie stuff, and it's all the same, and it's, I don't know, it's weird. Because it's the type of thing where they're like, you know, we'll only come back if the story is there, the screenplay is there, if we find a way to, like, justify coming back. And then they do come back, and there's no way they could have justified this. It was so, I don't know, lazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a bummer, I gotta say. And I wasn't alone. I was with a couple people. They agreed, like, nah, not too into it. And I talked to some other people who saw it as a group, and they're like, nah, we don't like it either. So,
do you do that often, Chris, after watching a movie? Releasing an opinion about it, do you check with other people and say, maybe I'm the crazy one, maybe this was really good and I didn't get it?
Well, yeah, no, I'm always interested in what other people thought of a film, what the general feeling is out there, what the consensus is amongst the people I know. I like seeing what's the people, what everyone agrees on, disagrees on, etc. So yeah, sure. I mean, it's just natural curiosity.
Gotcha.
That's all I got to say. No matter how curious you are out there, just don't go see Jason Bourne. It's not going to be worth your time or money. It's super sad, actually.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a bummer and emblematic of this entire summer movie season. It just has not been very good.
Do you think Matt Damon was just contractually obligated to do this? Is that the deal with these Bourne movies? Or do you think... he read the script, it looked really interesting, and then something in translation got lost along the way, maybe?
Yeah, he was not under any contract to do this. He wanted to do it. The only reason he would have done it is if he wanted to, which he did. He kind of talked the director into coming back to doing it. So obviously someone gave him a story pitch or an idea that he liked. That's like loosely tied into this company, like a company that's a stand-in for Facebook or Google, and there's like a privacy thing and like how this company works with the CIA, and I don't know. Like, I could see where on paper a good Bourne movie could have been made out of that.
Okay.
But really, what they were doing is they were like, they're more like making a Snowden movie, which is funny because Oliver Stone did make a Snowden movie, but they were making an Edward Snowden movie with all this privacy CIA stuff.
Right.
And really, we just want to see Matt Damon punch some people. And then he does, but that has nothing to do with privacy issues on the internet, so I don't know. The movie makes some sense.
Yeah. They just threw in some action because the action was needed. Maybe not. Right.
They needed the action. They threw in the action. They threw in all this stuff about privacy to make it, you know, a more modern movie, because that's the whole thing with the Bourne movies. They're supposed to be in lockstep with what's going on in culture. And that's why I think that one just not that good. Yeah. That's unfortunate because it was the only movie I saw last weekend.
And it got the flatulent sound from you, so that's a pooper. It's not worth checking out.
Yeah, maybe hit my soundboard there, for sure.
Hey.
and then this weekend, I was like really looking forward to this movie, Suicide Squad, that comes out tonight, actually, with the midnight shows.
Yeah.
That's how they did it now. I know it's a comic book movie, and you're not really into comic book movies, but this is the type that has the potential to like be outside of the box enough for more people to be able to get into it. But the reviews have been coming back this week, not too hot. So my expectations have been checked greatly for this movie.
Yeah, I'm hearing a buzz about that film. A couple of people that have been at my shows have mentioned to me, are you going to see The Suicide Squad? I'm like, first I'm hearing of it. So
Yeah, it's the marketing has been solid, and it looks like it's going to make a ton of money this weekend. But as far as actually it being any good, well, people are going to have to listen to episode 187 this weekend of Cinema Crespedito to find out.
You know what interests me to go see is the new Viggo Mortensen movie. Have you heard about Captain Fantastic. What do you know about that?
Festivals this year at like Cannes and stuff like that. It got pretty good reviews, solid reviews. Not everyone wasn't over the moon for it. Some people didn't like necessarily buy the plot or the characterization of the family. But for the most part, people seem to really like it. They like Viggo, and it is the type of movie that would play at the Enzian, which is where it was for the last couple of weeks. I think it might be gone as of this weekend. I haven't checked their website, actually. So people, if you're interested in seeing an indie film with Viggo Mortensen, who's like, I don't know, that guy could have been like the biggest movie star if he wanted to, but he honestly chooses not to. He picks like small, weird movies. He took his Lord of the Rings clout and made A History of Violence and Eastern Promises, which is two crazy, crazy movies.
So, right, and he made that movie I really loved with the horse. He has a special horse.
Yes. The one about the horse race. I forgot what it's called. Movie about the horse. Viggo movie. Viggo horse movie. That's what it said on the script when they wrote it. Untitled Viggo horse movie.
Well, if you Google that, you'll find it. So
it'll pop.
Anybody
right
interested? I definitely recommend that movie. It was pretty good.
Wood Desert. Yeah. So I'm gonna see this comic book movie, see if it's any good, and then I'll be able to check in back with you next week and let you know.
All right, that sounds great, Chris. I really appreciate you calling in.
Hey, man, it's my pleasure. Great show as always.
Thank you. Tell everyone how they can get a hold of you.
Hit me up on Twitter at IamChrisCrespo. The show is Cinema Crespo. So you can listen on iTunes and Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera. And, tweet me. I am Chris Crespo. That's the easiest way.
All right, guys.
You're a bunch of college kids. Tweet at me, yo.
That sounds good. Have a good one, brother. And check in with us next Thursday. That's Chris Crespo, everybody, from Cinema Crespediso. Awesome podcast. Some of our people have been on that program. Erica Lee, myself, Simon Time. Simon Time, by the way, I have some announcements to make quickly. Simon Time and his lovely woman, Jen, produced a baby over the weekend. Little Simon Time named Harrison. And so I want to give a shout out to them, and I'm going to get to meet the little tyke tomorrow. But Simon says hi to everybody, and we'll probably welcome him back on the program next week. Right now he's up to his elbows in diapers and baby formula and all that fun stuff. Also, I want to give a shout out to my original right-hand man, Big Mike. It's Big Mike's birthday today, and so I want to send this song out to Big Mike. It's called Amsterdam Rag. I know my friend Big Mike went to Amsterdam when he was younger and had such good stories that he brought back. So hopefully this will he'll appreciate this song. It's Ben Prestige, and it's called Amsterdam Rag. I'm Curtis Earth. WPRK Winter Park, Florida, is our radio station, the best in basement radio.
Cinema Crespediso After Show.
Guys, here we go. After Showtime, how you doing? How you doing?
How you doing? What is up?
I'm Chris Crespo, hanging out here in the studio. Got some things to talk about. Some things over the last few weeks. Been waiting a minute to drop this bit of After Show, this bit of ramble. I'm going to try to do it kind of quick, too, but we're going to cover a whole bunch of topics. So hang with me here. This is how we're going to do it. Shout out to Lapalux. Song's called Midnight Peelers. Check it out, guys. It is so dope. Pretty cool, right? Pretty cool, right? All right, so here we go. This is what we're doing. You know, if I were to ever have like a left wing or more liberal, or more independent style, I guess you can say, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh type show. That's what I would be doing. I would be just like those blowhards saying ridiculous shit, but in the other direction. The difference between my blowhardedness and theirs is that mine would be coming from a position of equality and truth and love, and theirs is coming from hate and fear-mongering and whatnot, so that's why I would win. Because love trumps hate, right? Does it? Because I tell you lately, man, with some things going on in the air, some things happening in this country, I don't know about that anymore. Kind of got me feeling a little like this. Every chance they had to do something malicious behind your back, they did. Yeah, this goes out to them. You know who you are. That's like status update, hashtag current mood, Tony Danza tap dance extravaganza. That's how I'm feeling these days with the craziness that's going on out there. That's what we're going to be talking about real quick. Why we all got to band together behind one thing, and then if we want to change it, we got to do some other stuff. That's the roadmap. That's what we're talking about. I'm going to start talking a little bit about this whole third-party candidate situation with the two-party system we got, how misguided that is at this moment, and how we really need to fix that that whole situation. Then I'm going to talk a little bit about how I can't be... I'm not comfortable with... I can't withhold judgment from people, from white liberals who throw away their votes in this election that would help in any way whatsoever to help Donald Trump get elected. We're going to talk about that. And then probably finish it off real quick with why there is no equivalency between Clinton and Trump. People who are waffling between the two drive me insane. There is no Clinton or Trump where I can't vote for either. That's so absurd. And how you're just fallen for 20 years of Republican propaganda, and you're perpetrating it. Good job, guys. We'll be talking about that at the end of the show, and then why Trump is ultimately the worst candidate. I don't know, man. In like 50 years, probably, since Barry Goldwater. And we'll talk about why Barry Goldwater, and why the Republican Party is now the party of white identity politics and upholding the racist paradigm. Sorry, Repubs out there. Sorry, handful of conservatives who actually listen to this. If you do, God bless you. You're the smart ones. Come join us. Come to our side. Because there are not only two parties in this country. There's a centrist Democrat-Republican party that leans a little left, And then there's the white nationalist fringe conservative party. Ultra Christian, ultra white nationalist. Men's rights activist style political party. What's next here? Seriously, current mood. Hashtag Rage Against the Machine was right. So, we're going to start with the whole third party thing. Guys, listen, I know that some of you want to vote for third party candidates. Every 4 years, we talk about the Green Party candidate and the Libertarian Party candidate and how the Libertarians want to make weed legal and prostitution. They want to make everything legal. And how the Green Party is like, they're like left wing, but they're like cooler because they're the Green Party. They're more about grassroots, so they say, and people's rights and stuff. But the current candidates for those parties are whack. And first off, let's get started there. Current candidates are whack. Libertarian Party. This Johnson, Gary Johnson. This dude at a convention. Was he at the DNC? This is in a New Yorker profile, I believe. New Yorker. Someone told him, like, oh, we got to go over to the Harriet Tubman convention hall, convention room, or whatever. And he was like, Harriet Tubman? Who's Harriet Tubman? Yeah, they'd be told who Harriet Tubman was. This dude's running for president, doesn't know who Harriet Tubman is. If you think that's not a big deal, go fuck yourself. Because if you don't know about the intimate racial politics and history of this country, you can't lead it. You have to know where we've been and how things have gotten the way they are in order to change it in a positive way. If you don't know who Harriet Tubman is, you cannot be fucking president. Disqualified. Bye-bye, Johnson. If you think that's fine, you're dumb. Sorry. I'm telling you, I'm taking the kid gloves off. I'm telling you the way it is because I am respecting you. Okay? I'm telling you, don't vote for Gary Johnson because that is dumb. Also, the libertarian philosophy is a bunch of amoral bullshit. The whole no regulations thing. What's that joke? Ayn Rand, Paul Ryan, and Rand Paul walk into a bar. They all die from alcohol poisoning because there are no more regulations. Know what I mean? The idea that, oh, well, then people just stop using businesses that are bad for people. The market will correct itself over time. That's some, like, step aside, let evil reign bullshit, dude. Libertarian. What a bunch of crap. Don't give me that selfish bullshit. Libertarianism is like some of the most selfish bullshit out there. For real. Don't give me that shit. Don't fall for the whole, you want to legalize weed stuff, all drugs. Don't fall for that. They just don't want to pay taxes. The Republicans who don't want to pay taxes. Green Party candidate Jill Stein is not a good person. Sorry, guys. She's not good. If you are a Jill Stein supporter, I would suggest you take a minute to actually research her and find out what she's all about. Because obviously you haven't if you're a Jill Stein supporter, but you're also listening to this show and you got this far. Because she is not cool, guys. She is not cool. Jill Stein is giving credence to the whole anti-vaccination movement. Saying people have real questions and being a doctor and a physician coming out and saying, you know, the whole anti-vaccine thing has some merit. That's really dangerous. That's really bad. There are now measles outbreaks again in this country because parents aren't getting their kids vaccinated. They're going to schools and they're getting sick and they're getting everyone else sick. Good job, guys. Welcome back to the early 1900s. Perfect timing too for right when our antibiotics and shit are not working anymore. We're apparently leaving the age of antibiotics, and just in time for a bunch of old school diseases to come raging back. Probably better than ever too. Good job, anti-vaxxers. And you want that to be a person like that to be a president? Person who denies science like that? We'll talk more about that later with Trump. Also, this is interesting. She went to the Democratic National Convention to take advantage of the whole Bernie or bust crowd and the seeds of discontent. That shit was embarrassing, guys. Very embarrassing, Bernie bros. You're a bunch of douche nozzles. Excuse me. I don't have a cough button. Very low rent here. And Joe Stein was there, and she had some quotes about Hillary and electing her and how... Well, let's just see here. Right from her mouth. Blah, blah, blah. She says, this is on NPR. She said, the scary things that Donald Trump says Hillary Clinton has already done, whether it's massively deporting immigrants, whether it's threatening nuclear warfare, both those things are exaggerations. Kind of hard to also pin Clinton for Obama's immigration policies and the deportations that happened under him. And also, while she is war hawkish, to compare her to Donald Trump's assertions, wondering why we can't use nuclear weapons first, not understanding the whole idea of a nuclear deterrent, and being like, why don't we just use our weapons? We got them, why don't we just use them? She wants to equate those two? That is some whack shit. And then also, here comes some more, just like Johnson, Mr. Johnson and his not knowing who Harriet Tubman is, here comes some more misstating, misunderstanding of history that is super scary and dangerous. She said... she was asked, this was at the DNC, on the floor of the DNC, by a Fox Business personality, Adam Riley, whether she was concerned her opposition to Clinton might tip the election to Trump. She sure wasn't. The rise of right-wing extremism in this country, Stein said, is being driven by NAFTA, globalization, and the big banks, all promoted by the Clintons, she said. Putting another Clinton in the White House will fan the flames of this right-wing extremism, she said. We have known that for a long time, ever since Nazi Germany. So apparently neoliberal politics and globalization is what leads to right-wing fascism and Nazism. Interesting. And what textbooks did you read inside of Joe Stein? What Texas company made these textbooks, these history books that you read that you got this information from? What a misunderstanding of, a dangerous misunderstanding of how the world works. And she wants to run this country. Get the fuck out of here, and get the fuck out of here, anyone who wants to vote for her, because that's absurd. That is some absurd shit. A little bit of Protest the Hero. Protest the Hero. So the whole voting for a third party thing is a wonderful idea. I've advocated for it in the past, but here's the thing, guys. If you want to vote for a third party candidate, if you want to break the two-party system, you can't vote for a third party candidate once every 4 years at the presidential election. That's bullshit. If you want to change the system, you have to participate in it. You can't change something that you don't participate in. How many of you only vote every 4 years, like during the presidential elections? Raise your hands. A lot of you do. I would raise my hand, except I did vote in a midterm election a couple years ago because the governor seat was up, as well as the medical marijuana amendment, which barely almost passed but did not. And then Rick Scott was fucking barely elected, and it was not good. It was not good because enough people didn't turn out. That's why you all got to turn out. You got to vote, right? So voting for a third party candidate once every 4 years. Like, oh, the summer election, third party candidate, that shit doesn't work. You got to do it. Every local election that comes up, you got to find a third party. You might have to build your own third party because, you know, national party, national level Green Party, they're not doing it. They're terrible. They are terrible at putting forth candidates. They're all talk, no walk. Trust. Look it up. Read a great article out there. A couple of Dan Savage posts recently about the Green Party and how they just don't do the work. They just show up at the presidential election and siphon off a few votes and expect to get people's attention. It's a bunch of bullshit. So you gotta do it at local levels. You gotta do it regularly. You gotta do it every year. You gotta vote the bad people out, the good ones in. If you don't know who the good ones are, maybe you're the good ones and you need to fucking start running for shit. Think about that. Voting for Trump to blow up the system or one of these other party candidates is a terrible, terrible idea.
This drought is relieved with acid rain. This drought is relieved with acid rain. This drought is relieved with acid rain.
And don't doubt right-wing extremism. Don't doubt it, man. You know what all these Islamophobes hate to point out? How any Islamic-based terrorism is right-wing terrorism, right-wing extremism, because we're talking about people who are doing these horrible acts in the name of versions of Islam that are extremely strict and hateful. Like, what if the Westboro Baptist Church was way more mobilized, not like hundreds of people instead of a dozen members? They had hundreds, if not thousands, of people in their congregation, and they were, like, out there fucking organizing and shit. Think about that. That's that. Super extremism, fundamentalism. And that right-wing extremism feeds in on itself in weird ways, right? Follow me on this one here. The Orlando shooter, Omar Mateen, who he dialed 911 during his rampage and, like, declared his allegiance to ISIS and Al-Qaeda and like, three other terrorist groups that are, like, at odds with each other. All right, clue number one, he didn't know what he was talking about. He declared his allegiance to all the Muslim groups that he ever heard of, that he ever read about. And everyone's like, oh, shit, ISIS, Islamic terrorism, it's here, it's in America. They kill all these poor people in Orlando. A lot of people all the right-wingers were trying to ignore that they were gay people. It took Rick Scott days to acknowledge that they were gay people in any way, shape, or form. That it might have been a hate crime in that way. And it's almost like that's too much. People barely even mentioned how it was Latin night when it was a whole bunch of Hispanic people that died. A lot of Jose's and Pedro's and Maria's and, you know, real bummer. So, check this out, guys. This is some shit. This is some shit here. This is from, I'm getting this from Raw Story. The blah, 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 blah. Here's some information. Yeah. First off, he was a heavy abuser of steroids. This was information that was suppressed by the FBI. He also was part of... he wanted to be a cop. There were many pictures of him, of himself, with NYPD shirts. He wanted to be a cop super bad. And he worked for the St. Lucie County Sheriff's Department through the at the courthouse. He was like a security guard there, and he was trying to use that to get into the local department. Now, while he was working at the courthouse, the deputies that were there apparently harassed him. This is all according to Omar Mateen, right? And this is all coming out through that FBI investigation. Here's what Mateen alleged. That while he was working at the courthouse, a sheriff's deputy, and he even gives the guy's name, says, "Don't you Arabs sleep with goats?" Another deputy and Gulf War vet said to have a reputation for right-wing views, declared, "We need to kill all the fucking Muslims," at one point. That's according to Mateen. And he would also stand behind him and clip and unclip his gun behind Mateen to threaten him. Mateen stated someone put Representative Alan West campaign stickers on his car and deflated his front two tires. Alan West is known for his anti-Muslim views. Another deputy pointed at a dirty mat on the floor and said to Mateen, "Isn't it your prayer time? Take your magic carpet and pray to your Allah. Make sure it's in the east." A whole bunch of shit. There's a whole bunch of things here. This list goes on and on and on. And all this is coming out because what happened was eventually they kept accusing him of being a terrorist. And they kept, every time any sort of terrorist incident happened, they would grill him. Different cops would come up to him and ask him what he thought about what was happening. And, I mean, this dude was born in fucking New York, man. He's an American. He doesn't know any shit about any of that. And he's also mentally unstable, a steroid abuser, and wants to be a cop. Dude was emotionally unhinged. And more going on. We'll talk about the gay stuff in a minute. And he then one day flipped out and told everyone, I'm ISIS. I'll bomb this place. I'll kill you all, blah, blah. Like, because these right-wing racist cops that pushed this dude so far just because of the color of his skin and because he was Muslim that he, like, sort of gave them what they wanted, you know? That whole, you bully someone to the point where they kind of snap back in a weird way. So then, of course, everyone's like, oh, shit, he finally admitted that he's ISIS after us hitting him with it for, you know, however long. FBI shows up, and he tells the FBI, do I even have the quotes here? You know what he said? He said, after bombing, the Boston bombing occurred, everyone got really nasty. So I said, know what? I'm related to the Boston bomber. He's my first cousin. And I know the Kenny and Wall shooter as well. And he said that so that they would leave him alone. And when the FBI talked to him, Mateen said, I love the U.S. The boasting of terrorist ties I did just to satisfy the gang of coworkers ganged up against me. There is no fact to it. I'm 1,000% American. I'm ready to give up my life defending the U.S. Again, I want to emphasize that I'm an honest American. I'm 1,000% anti-terrorist organizations and their ideas. That's why I chose to have a future in law enforcement. Maybe become ATF Customs or FBI agent. This dude so wanted to be some sort of like cop or FBI. He wanted that authority so bad. And then because of this incident, he was let go eventually from the courthouse and he wouldn't be able to get a job as a cop or an FBI agent or anything like that ever again. So now his hopes for that are all dashed. Okay, and on top of all this, the whole time this dude is gay, and he has a secret gay lifestyle where he would drive from Port St. Lucie to the Pulse nightclub in Orlando dozens of times. That's why he knew about the place to try to hook up with dudes. And there was one guy who came out and said that he hooked up with this guy a bunch of times, and you know this guy wasn't doing it, didn't come out and say this for publicity. Because he had on a wig and crazy makeup, and they did the thing to his voice. They gave him he was like,
I know that guy, and we had sex at the hotel a bunch of times, and he was a terrible lover.
He was that type of thing, you know? So obviously the guy wasn't doing it for publicity because he was trying to hide who he was, but he was also letting people know that this dude was a closet gay guy. Who his dad is an Afghan back home in Afghanistan, is like an official, and you know, Afghanistan back to right wing religious extremism, very anti homosexual, just like Christians in this country. And he grew up in a household where God would punish homosexuals, and it was an evil thing. The guy, the father, even came out the day after Omar Mateen killed all the people at the Pulse Club, and he came out and he was like, he's like, I'm appalled by my son doing this. It's abhorrent. He should not have killed all these gay people. It is up to God to judge homosexuals, not man. He was trying to be like, look, I understand. It's not up to us to kill gays. It's up to God to kill them or some crazy bigoted shit. So this dude grows up in that household in a country that's very anti-homosexual. It has been for a long time. It's only been in the last decade, really, that's been turning around, right? And he was pushed out of his dream profession by super racist, super bigoted, right-wing Islamophobes who were in the profession that he wanted to get into, right? All that information does not get played in the media. Why? Because that doesn't help their ISIS is coming narrative. It doesn't help sell the fear of Muslims and Islam. Instead, it points to the hypocrisy of a right-wing religion in America and how this is what happens when you stoke the fires of anti-homosexuality sentiment. And that extends to even the Christian, the halfway tolerant Christian, love the sinner, hate the sin, condescending bullshit. That's bullshit, guys. That's a bunch of bullshit. I don't want to hear it. That's like saying love the person but hate their blue eyes. Bunch of crap. Hey. So when people try to describe the Pulse shooting as like another bit of Islamic terrorism, know that they're wrong and they're misinformed, or they're pushing the narrative, because that was much more of a person lashing out against the world, against himself and against his family, and hating, self-hating who he is, because he was brought up in a house and in a world that told him being gay is wrong, but he's gay. He couldn't not be gay. He acted on it a whole bunch of times, obviously. And that's why that happened. That's why the biggest shooting in America happened. Not because of Islam, but because of just general bigotry towards gays. That's why voting for Trump is dangerous. Because he picked, for whatever reason, he picked the most anti-gay, one of the most anti-gay right-wing politicians out there, Mike Pence, governor of Indiana, who signed his own religious freedom bill in Indiana, was last year, and then they had to like repeal that shit after a few days. They're freaking out because everyone was like, you can't, this is just this is to protect religious freedoms, but it's really so people can discriminate against gays based on their religious beliefs. You want this guy dictating policy? You want this guy in office in any way whatsoever? That's why voting for Trump is dangerous. Not just foolish, but flat out dangerous. Not even close to voting for Clinton. Not even close. What else we got here? Oh man, we looped. We looped around. We're back to the Lap of Lux. Let me see. I gotta pull something else up. I was gonna try to do this a lot quicker, but there's a lot going on here. I'm trying to get it all done. That's why also this is also why the same reason why you don't hear about more about the Munich shooter that happened recently. I think a couple weeks ago now, a couple Fridays ago in Munich. The gunman, Ali David Sunbeli, had Iranian roots, so media outlets from Berlin to New York City did not hesitate to link him with Islam. Many news channels referred to calls Sunbeli a German Iranian instead of just German. Many reports based on rumors which circulated during the first hours of the massacre claimed that Sunbeli shouted Allahu Akbar before he murdered innocent victims. So this was when that Munich shooting happened. Everyone immediately was like, Islamic terrorism. We're shouting about it in the media. Once the dust cleared, however, they realized it was not an act of terror. The shooter was not motivated by Islamist religious extremism, but by the same fanaticism as those who attempted to seize the moment to incite against Muslims. The date of the shooting, July 22nd, appeared to have been deliberately chosen. Exactly 5 years to this date, in 2011, the right-wing extremist and self-styled counter-jihadist Anders Breivik killed 77 people at a youth camp in Norway. You guys remember that story about that crazy Austrian dude, I think? Was he Norwegian? This happened in Norway. That motherfucker who just took a machine gun to a youth camp and slaughtered a whole bunch of kids. He was the one who then inspired that jack-off 7-year-old at Connecticut, Sandy Hook, to mow down a bunch of kids at little children at that school. You see how this feeds into each other? It's a feedback loop of viciousness that we have to cut off. And this guy chose the 5-year anniversary of the right-wing Anders Breivik massacre to do his own massacre where he shot up kids himself. All right? According to Bavarian investigator Sunbeli, was gripped with an obsessive hatred of Turks and Arabs. One of Germany's leading dailies, Frankfurter Zeitung, I guess it's another newspaper, reported that Sunbeli admired Adolf Hitler and considered it an honor to share a birthday with the Führer. It was also revealed that Sunbeli supported the Alternative for Germany, which is the country's leading right-wing party. And that's why the news of that massacre has dropped off the face of the earth. Ignore it from this point forward, because he was, despite being Iranian, from Iranian descent, He was identifying with the right-wing nationalists in Germany. Hated Turks, hated Arabs. Admired Hitler, and admired Anders Breivik for killing a bunch of kids. So let's get him out of the news, because that doesn't support our Islam is killing everyone media narrative, and the whole Omar Martinez gay, repressed gay thing doesn't help our Islam narrative either. So let's get those out of mainstream media. Mainstream media is lying to you. Remember, they're selling you fear so that you continue to watch, so they can make ad money. All right, remember that. You're being lied to. That's why also you're not hearing about this story. This is from the Oroville Mercury Register, picked up by the Associated Press. Years of surveillance leads to terror charge against officer in Alexandria, Virginia. For years, authorities had concerns about Metro Transit Police Officer Nicholas Young. He traveled to Libya and boasted of joining rebel groups there and even described his collection of Nazi memorabilia to law enforcement, according to court documents. But until last month, he hadn't committed a crime. Now Young, 36, of Fairfax, Virginia, is the first law enforcement officer in the U.S. to be charged with a terror-related crime after prosecutors say he bought about $250 worth of gift cards and FBI sting for someone he thought was working with the IS group. This makes no sense, people. Are you listening to this? A dude named Nicholas Young, very Islamic sounding, right? Nicholas Young. Claimed to join rebel groups in Libya, but also had Nazi memorabilia, and then he was buying gift cards to give money to the Islamic State? What the fuck is up with this guy? If convicted, Young could face up to 20 years in prison. He had been under surveillance since 2010 when he traveled to Libya at least once in 2011. He said he joined rebel forces seeking to oust Muammar Gaddafi. He traveled with body armor, a Kevlar helmet, and other military-style items. He was deeply paranoid about law enforcement spying on him. Well, that was, you know, actually very correct of him. Often taking the battery out of his cell phone when he wanted to go somewhere and talk, Young frequently told one undercover source to be wary of potential informants, according to the affidavit. You hearing about this guy in the news a lot? No? Exactly. Because it doesn't fit the narrative. Because his name is not Muhammad Ali Akbar, Mujahideen, make a jihadist, you know what I'm saying? So be aware of what you hear and read in the mainstream media, in the news, on the CNN, and the Fox News, and USA Today. They choose what to run and what not to run. I'm going to wrap this up here with this whole people waffling between Trump and Clinton. It makes no sense whatsoever. No sense. How do you think the whole Hillary Clinton is dishonest thing came about, people? Think about this right now. If you think, oh, Hillary Clinton's a dishonest politician, I can't trust her. Think about it to yourself. Ask yourself why. Here's the question. Why do you think she's dishonest? What has she done that you find so dishonest? If your answers, I'm going to give you three tries, okay? I'm going to give you three tries. I know right now your number one try is the emails. That's bullshit. So strike one. Your second try is going to be Benghazi. That's also bullshit. Strike two. So you have one try left. What reason? Why do you think Hillary Clinton is so much more untrustworthy than your average politician? Let you think about that for a second. So, guys, in 1996, the New York Times published an editorial called "The Blizzard of Lies," by a guy named William Sapphire, and it was all about, at the time, some of the scandals that were around the Clinton administration, Whitewater, stuff like that, some real estate stuff. And it's a lot like the Benghazi stuff, where there was a lot of accusations. Many millions of dollars and hours were spent investigating these accusations, and then nothing got turned up at any point whatsoever. But in before she was cleared, before all this stuff happened, this guy, William Sapphire, wrote this essay in the New York Times. In the very first paragraph, he finishes it with, our first lady, ... is a congenital liar. The phrase congenital liar has been linked with Hillary Clinton since this moment, since 1996. This has been 20 years of Republican propaganda that you have been falling for. So when you think that she's dishonest, and you repeat that she's a dishonest person more so than any other, and that's why she's not a trustworthy candidate for president, and that's why you can't vote for her, just rest assured, this dude, William Sapphire, who wrote this on January 8, 1996, his job is done. His job was done better than he could have ever hoped or expected. And you're all falling for it. I fell for it too for a while. I was right there with y'all. But you know what? Look with this. Look what I got here in my hand. Information. And with new information comes a new thought process. And that thought process is don't fall for the bullshit. You're listening? You're with me on this one? So whether or not you don't like Hillary's policies, even if you're a Republican and you're into conservative politics, that somehow isn't wrapped in white identity politics. We'll talk about that. We'll close up with that. This is there's no equivalency between a Trump presidency, a Trump Pence presidency, and a Clinton Cain presidency. Clinton is a politician. She knows she's a qualified one. Senator of New York for 8 years, Secretary of State for 4 under President Obama. Her candidacy, her presidency would become pretty much Obama 2.0, extending a lot of the same, all that stuff, hopefully slightly more progressive, at least in terms of like women's rights and stuff, right? Just naturally by her being having a female perspective. Even if you don't agree with her politics, she's still capable of running the country, not running us into the ground economically, socially, culturally. She doesn't incite racism or bigotry. She's not appealing to nationalism, to xenophobia, to gather support. Instead, the Democratic Party, the Progressive Party in this country, is all about inclusion. It's all about reaching out to racial and ethnic and religious minorities and making sure everyone has a say. It's nowhere near equivalent, all right? And of all places, Reddit, of all fucking places, someone on Reddit compiled a case file against Donald Trump that's as damning as it gets. I'm going to go through a bunch of it. I recommend you check it out. If you look it up on Reddit, it's titled A Final Response to, quote, Tell Me Why Trump is a Fascist. And then what he does is this person has a huge, incredibly huge list of all the dumb things and dangerous things Trump has said, with numerous links to references. So none of these are alleged. None of these things didn't happen. They all happen. They all have resources, you know. So here we go. Trump openly calls for U.S. to commit war crimes and advocates for the murder of innocent women and children. Four links there. Doubles down after veterans speak out claiming U.S. soldiers would not commit war crimes or torture children, even if ordered to. Trump responds with, they're not going to refuse me. If I say to do it, they're going to do it. Trump on torture. Even if it doesn't work, they probably deserve it anyway. Trump renews calls for torture, citing public executions and mass rape committed by ISIS, promising for the U.S. to do the same, fighting fire with fire. Trump says Geneva Convention's a problem and needs to be changed. Trump threatens to shoot down Russian planes, starting war with Russia. Trump says he won't rule out using nuclear weapons in Europe. Trump calls for a global nuclear rearmament. Trump says he will declare a world war as president. Trump's solution for high gas prices is to violate the Geneva Convention by invading several of America's allies in the Middle East and Africa, unprovoked, by forced to seize oil fields for himself. High gas prices? Gas is like $1.92. What the fuck? When asked for clarification about the above-mentioned plan to steal land from multiple nations on two different continents, Trump responded with, we're not stealing anything, we're taking. Trump says during debate he wants to invade Syria with 30,000 soldiers. Trump runs TV ad promising to seize foreign oil fields. Trump promises mandatory death penalty for anyone accused of murdering a police officer despite no legal grounds to impose that. Trump thinks lethal injection is too comfortable, wants to devise a more painful way to execute people. Anne Frank's sister says that Trump reminds her of Hitler. North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un endorses Donald Trump. Vladimir Putin endorses Donald Trump. KKK endorses Donald Trump. Convicted neo-Nazi terrorist Don Black endorses Donald Trump. Chinese government party endorses Donald Trump. Serbian war criminal Josiflav Sezic endorses Donald Trump. Greek neo-Nazi leader Ilias Panagiotaros endorses Trump. White supremacist cult leader August Christ III endorses Trump during sentencing hearing after he was found guilty of child molestation. You can't beat an endorsement like that, Don, can you? Trump praises Saddam Hussein. Trump retweets a quote from Mussolini. Trump uses picture of Nazi soldiers in official campaign poster. Trump picks famed neo-Nazi white supremacist leader as delegate. Trump's son gives interview with Holocaust Denying radio host show who wants to bring back slavery. Trump then gives the radio host press credentials and invites him to events. Guys, this list goes on and on. I am a tenth of the way through this list. Trump brags he could murder someone and still not lose support. I remember that. Trump says of alive during World War II, he might have supported the Japanese internment camps. Trump calls for execution of Edward Snowden. Kill the traitor, he says. Unbelievable. If you think Trump and Clinton are equivalent and you're waffling between the two, I got nothing for you. You can take that obvious white privilege and shove it because you don't see... You don't know what it's like to be in a country where you're looked down upon for your background and your race and your ethnicity, or being questioned about the type of person you are because where your parents are born. That's never happened to you. It's happened to me. It's happened to me recently. So, fuck you. If you can't see past your own white privilege right now, your white nose. Now, I'm sure you can. You're listening to the show. You're cool. You're listening to me. This is deep. This is deep in the after show. This has been on for a long time now, so right now I'm arming you. I'm telling you, this is what you take out to the world to shut people down. And then when people are sick, say they're sick and tired of the Republican Party being accused of racism, you tell them this is what happened. This is how we're ending the show. You tell them this is how the Republican Party became the party of white identity politics. Barry Goldwater ran for president for the Republican Party in the 1960s, and when he did so, that was right around the time LBJ was passing the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So Barry Goldwater ran on a platform opposing the Civil Rights Act, saying free, separate, equal is perfectly fine. Blacks need to stay on the back of the bus. They can't use the same water fountains and sit at the same counters as white people, blah, blah, blah. He wanted to shut that shit down. And he ran under a Republican ticket and was nominated, very much like Trump was, for president. What happened was at that point, the South was very Democratic. This is the Republican-Democratic switchover. The South was very Democratic, but those Southern Democrats were very racist. And they didn't want the Civil Rights Act to be passed. So they flocked to the Democratic, they flocked to the Republican ticket, to Barry Goldwater. Barry Goldwater siphoned off all the racists out of the Democratic Party and brought them into the Republican Party. Meanwhile, the Democrats support the Civil Rights Movement, Civil Rights Act, and they get all the whatever Republicans were like for that. That's how the switch happened, the ideological switch. And from that point forward, the conservative side, the conservative politics in America, the Republican politics in America, thanks to Goldwater and thanks to opposing the Civil Rights Act, which is insane when you think about it, it has branded the Republican Party, rightly so, as the party of white nationalism, white xenophobia, and anti-black, anti-Hispanic, anti-everything else that's not the paradigm, the power, the white Protestant male power structure of this country that it was built on and that it's been running on for the last 200 plus years. That's why now Trump has been able to hijack the ticket by playing specifically to those fears, because by establishing themselves as that party in the 60s, from Goldwater and beyond, law and order rhetoric, et cetera, et cetera. The Republican Party has been associated with the hashtag white genocide, that type of thing, that type of bullshit. So, I mean, it's just a plain fact right now. The well has been poisoned on the Republican side, and the few people who believe in small government conservative politics and who are still not somehow hate-filled, because it's weird how those two things are linked together. You guys need to come over to the good side. Come over to the rebel forces, to the Jedi. Join the new Democratic Party, which is much more centrist than I would like it to be. I'm much more progressive than Democrats are. I'm only registered Democrat because Florida has closed primaries and I don't want to have a voice. So, guys, I'm going to leave you with this. In November, whenever the Republican presidential election is up, there is no choice at the top of the ticket. It's Hillary. I'm with her. And don't look down on the fact that, don't ignore the fact that it's the first woman president. It's a long time overdue. That's a huge accomplishment, and that's something to be celebrated. Even if you don't like Hillary, at least, you know, there are a lot of people who didn't like Barack Obama, but we're still, like, celebrating the fact that, hey, at least we nominated, like, a black man. That's coming a long way in this country. Nominating a woman will be coming a long way. And we will really, really have come a long way when in, like, 8 years from now or 12 years from now, we elect Michelle Obama as president. Not only do we elect our second black president and our second woman president. That's the real hump. But it's a black woman president? Come on. That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. So I'm going to leave you with this, guys. Be excellent to each other, like I always say, but I mean that fully. And Hillary is the only choice at the top of the ticket, but then make sure you vote down ticket. Vote out. And my recommendation, this is what I'm going to do. I'm pretty much voting out everyone that's already in office. Replace them. Replace them all. Because they're all doing a terrible job and it's time for a switchover. Replace them all and then be more active in your local elections. Get involved with your city governments and your county, town governments. Work your way up to state level. You really want to affect change. You really want more than a two-party system to vote for when it comes to a presidential election every 4 years. Then you need to get started at a much more smaller level. I hate to say it, but look to the Tea Party. They did it quite successfully. They got governors. They are Tea Party governors throughout the country, ruining their various states. So if they can do it, if those hate mongrels can do it, I don't see why a more compassionate party can't. Guys, I love you. You love me. We're all one happy family. I'm out of here. Thanks, Ass.